Charles Bravo took 3 days to die. For 72 hours, the 30-year-old barrister lay in his bed at the Priory, his body consumed by a poison that doctors could not identify. He vomited until there was nothing left. He convulsed until his muscles gave out. And through it all, he said almost nothing about how it happened. Hello, friend. Welcome to Foul Play. I'm Shane Waters, and this is episode 3 of our season on the Balaam Mystery, The Poisoning of Charles Bravo in April 1876. If you haven't heard episodes 1 and 2, I encourage you to go back. This case builds on itself, and you'll want the full picture. When we left off, Charles had collapsed in his bedroom after drinking from his bedside water jug, screaming for hot water, before falling unconscious. His wife Florence rushed upstairs to find him vomiting violently, his face ashen, his body already beginning to fail. Tonight we follow Charles through those final 3 days. We'll witness the parade of doctors summoned to the Priory, including Queen Victoria's own physician, Sir William Gull. We'll hear the one statement Charles allegedly made about his condition, a statement that would become the most contested piece of evidence in the entire case. And we'll watch as this initial inquest reaches a verdict that satisfies absolutely no one. What we won't hear is the truth, because Charles Bravo, even as his organs shut down and his life slipped away, refused to say who poisoned him. Or perhaps he genuinely didn't know.
The first doctor arrived at the Priory within the hour. Dr. Joseph Moore, the family physician, had been summoned from his home nearby. He found Charles in severe distress, vomiting continuously, pulse weak and rapid, skin cold and clammy. The symptoms suggested poisoning, but of what kind? Moore could not determine. He administered mustard water to induce further vomiting, hoping to expel whatever toxin remained in Charles's stomach. It was standard treatment for suspected poisoning in 1876. Whether it helped or hastened his decline, we cannot know. By morning on April the 19th, Charles's condition had deteriorated dramatically. Florence, desperate, summoned more physicians. Dr. George Harrison arrived from London, and Dr. Royce Bell, a specialist in internal medicine. Each examined the patient, each reached the same conclusion. Charles Bravo was dying, and they could not determine why. The vomiting had become relentless. Charles could keep nothing down. Not water, not medicine, not the champagne someone thought might settle his stomach. His body was rejecting everything. What puzzled the doctors most was the nature of his suffering. Charles's symptoms did not match common poisons of the era. Not arsenic, which produced a different pattern of distress. Not laudanum, which would have caused drowsiness rather than this violent purging. Whatever was destroying Charles from within, it was something they had not encountered before. On April the 20th, Florence made the decision that would later be scrutinised endlessly. She sent for Sir William Gull, physician to Queen Victoria herself, and one of the most respected medical minds in England. Sir William arrived at the Priory that afternoon. He was 68 years old, at the height of his reputation, and his presence in that sick room gave the case an importance it might otherwise have lacked. When the Queen's doctor attends a dying man in Balaam, people take notice. Gull examined Charles thoroughly. He questioned the other physicians. He reviewed every treatment that had been administered, and he delivered his verdict. Charles Bravo was beyond saving. Whatever poison he had ingested, it had done irreversible damage. All that remained was to make him comfortable.
And now we come to the moment that would haunt this case for a century and a half. James Cannon Cox, the companion and housekeeper claimed that Charles made a confession during those final days. According to Miss Cox, she was alone with him in the sick room when he turned to her and said,
"I took poison. Don't tell Florence."
Five words that would change everything, or nothing at all. Miss Cox stated that she heard this confession clearly, that Charles spoke deliberately, knowing what he was saying, that he wanted to protect his wife from the knowledge that he had taken his own life. But here is where that story fractures. Mary Ann Keeber, the housemaid who had been at Charles's door when he first collapsed, was present in that sick room for much of those 3 days. She heard no such confession, no statement about poison, no request for secrecy. When the doctors asked Charles directly what he had taken, his responses were either vague or non-existent. Dr. Moore pressed him,
"What have you taken? You must tell us if we are to help you."
Charles reportedly answered only,
"I rubbed my gums with laudanum for toothache."
Laudanum for toothache. Not a fatal dose swallowed deliberately. A few drops rubbed on aching gums. Sir William Gall made his own attempt to extract information. He sat beside Charles's bed and asked plainly,
"Did you take anything to cause this illness?"
According to Gall's later testimony, Charles replied,
"I took nothing intentionally."
Nothing intentionally. The words of a man who did not know how poison entered his body. Or the words of a man covering for someone else. Or of a man too proud to admit he had tried to end his own life. Miss Cox's confession stood alone. No other witness corroborated it. No other person heard Charles Bravo claim responsibility for his own poisoning. And Miss Cox, as we discussed in episode 1, had every reason to deflect suspicion away from herself and Florence. Consider her position. She had been present at dinner that evening. She had been the last person to interact with Charles before his collapse. She knew about Florence's affair with Dr. Gully, about the secret abortion, and every scandal that could destroy the household that provided her livelihood. If Charles had been murdered, Mrs. Cox would have been a prime suspect. A confession of suicide solved everything. It removed the need to investigate further. It protected Florence. It protected Mrs. Cox herself. It made the whole ugly business go away. But did Charles actually say it?
On the morning of April the 21st, 1876, Charles Bravo's body finally surrendered. He had been dying for 3 days. The vomiting had stopped only because there was nothing left inside him. His kidneys had failed. His heart, weakened by the poison and the strain, was giving out. The doctors could do nothing but watch. Florence sat beside her husband's bed. Whatever tensions had existed in their 4-month marriage, whatever resentments and secrets, she stayed with him at the end. The servants reported that she wept, that she held his hand, that she begged him to fight. Charles Bravo died at approximately 5:30 that morning. He was 30 years old. He had been married for 122 days. The cause of death, according to the attending physicians, was irritant poison. The specific agent remained unknown.
This week's episode is brought to you by Guess Again, the new psychological thriller by Charlie Dunley, best-selling author of 20 Years Later, The Girl Who Was Taken, and Those Empty Eyes. If you spend as much time thinking about cold cases as I do, this one is going to grab you. Guess Again opens 10 years after 16-year-old Callie Jones vanishes from a small Wisconsin lake town. No body, no answers, just a community still living inside the silence. Then on the 10th anniversary, a dying detective makes a confession that cracks the case wide open. pulling a former cop right back into the work he swore he'd left behind. I read it in two sittings. The pacing is patient, the setting is atmospheric, and the final stretch genuinely made me set the book down for a second. If you're into Riley Sager, Ashley Flowers, or Alex Finlay, this one belongs at the top of your stack. Guess Again by Charlie Dunley. Out May 26th. Pick it up wherever you get your thrillers. All right, real quick. Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they figured out how to combine THC with functional ingredients, create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code Shane, S-H-A-N-E. They've found products for every vibe to help you sleep, get focused, feel happy and euphoric, even for better sex. I've been into their Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. After a long week digging through case files, my brain does not want to shut off. I pop one of these about 15 minutes before bed, and it's like someone finally hits the off switch. No grogginess the next morning either. Beyond gummies, Mood also has flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Everything ships discreetly right to your door. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned earlier, listeners get 20% off their first order with Shane, S-H-A-N-E. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches what you're looking for, and don't forget to use promo code Shane at checkout to save 20% off your first order. Try it today at Mood.com.
Dr. Moore suggested it might be antimony, a metallic poison used in the Victorian era for various purposes, including the treatment of horses, but he could not be certain. An autopsy was performed later that day. The post-mortem examination confirmed what the doctor suspected. Charles's stomach and intestines showed the distinctive damage of antimony poisoning. The amount found in his system was massive, enough to kill several men. This was not a case of accidental ingestion. No one swallows that much antimony by mistake. The question now facing the authorities was stark. Had Charles Bravo committed suicide, as Mrs. Cox claimed, or had someone murdered him? The first inquest opened on April the 25th, 1876, just 4 days after Charles's death. The coroner, William Carter, presided. The judge consisted of local tradesmen and property owners, the standard composition for a coroner's jury in Victorian England. They heard from the doctors who had attended Charles. They heard from the servants who had witnessed his collapse. They heard, most significantly, from Jane Cannon Cox, who repeated her claim that Charles had confessed to taking poison. Florence Bravo did not testify. Her doctor declared her too ill to appear, a convenient diagnosis that would later fuel suspicions about what she might have said under oath.
The first inquest lasted 3 days. It heard from 11 witnesses. It examined the medical evidence, the timeline, the physical evidence from the priory. And on April 28, 1876, the jury delivered its verdict. Charles Bravo had died from antimony poisoning. But there was insufficient evidence to determine whether it was suicide, accident, or murder. An open verdict. The legal equivalent of a shrug. The coroner, William Carter, accepted the jury's decision without comment. The body was released for burial. Charles Bravo was interred at Norwood Cemetery on April 29, 1876. And that, the authorities assumed, was the end of it. They were spectacularly wrong. The open verdict satisfied no one. Charles's family, his mother, his stepfather, Joseph Bravo, were furious. They did not believe their son had killed himself. Charles had been in good spirits. He had money. He had a wife. He had a promising career. What possible reason could he have had to swallow enough antimony to kill three men? other newspapers, meanwhile, had caught the scent of something far more interesting than a simple suicide. The Balham Mystery, as they were calling it, had all the elements Victorian readers craved. A beautiful widow, a secret affair with an older man, a young husband dead under suspicious circumstances, and a companion whose testimony seemed almost too convenient. Within days of the burial, articles began appearing that questioned the verdict. Editorials demanded answers. Letters flooded newspapers, suggesting theories. Florence had done it. Miss Cox had done it. Dr. Gully had arranged it from afar. The servants had conspired together. Public pressure mounted. The Home Office received petitions demanding a new investigation. Members of Parliament raised questions. The case that had been quietly buried with Charles Bravo refused to stay in its grave. On May 15, 1876, less than 3 weeks after the first inquest closed, the Attorney General ordered an extraordinary measure, a second inquest, a complete reinvestigation. Every witness would testify again. New witnesses would be called. And this time, Florence Bravo would take the stand.
In the weeks between inquests, investigators began looking more closely at the Priory and its occupants. What they found raised more questions than it answered. The antimony that killed Charles had come from somewhere. It was not a common household substance. You could not purchase it at the chemist's shop without signing the poison register. Yet someone had obtained a lethal quantity and introduced it into Charles's body, most likely through the water in his bedside jug. Investigators discovered that antimony was used at the stables at the Priory. It was a common treatment for horses in the Victorian era, used to improve their coats and treat various ailments. The stable hand, George Griffith, confirmed that antimony was kept on the premises. Anyone in the household could have accessed it, but who had motive? Florence Bravo, trapped in an unhappy marriage with a man who controlled her money and criticised her constantly, who knew about her past with Dr. Gully and threatened to expose it. She inherited everything upon Charles's death. Jane Cannon Cox, who had assisted in Florence's secret abortion, who feared losing her position if the marriage succeeded, who had access to Charles's room that fatal evening. She had been the last person with him before his collapse. Dr. James Manby Gully, the former lover spurned when Florence married Charles, who had terminated a pregnancy that may have been his child. He had the medical knowledge to know exactly how much antimony would kill. Or Charles Bravo himself, as Mrs. Cox claimed, a man who had discovered something so devastating about his wife's past that he chose death over continuing the marriage. The second inquest would attempt to answer these questions. It would become the longest inquest in English legal history. 23 days of testimony, 40 witnesses, thousands of pages of evidence. The entire nation would watch as the secrets of the Priory were laid bare. And at the centre of it all would be Florence Bravo, finally forced to speak.
3 days of dying. 3 days during which Charles Bravo could have named his killer, if he knew who it was. 3 days during which he said almost nothing useful. Why? If he took the poison himself, why not admit it clearly and spare everyone the investigation? If someone else poisoned him, why protect them with his silence? If it was an accident, why not explain how it happened? Charles Bravo went to his grave with answers he chose not to share, or perhaps with questions he could not answer himself. What we know is this: a healthy young man collapsed after drinking water in his own home. He suffered terribly for 72 hours, while the finest doctors in England watched helplessly. And when he died, the truth died with him. The first inquest gave us nothing. The open verdict was an admission of failure. The legal system throwing up its hands and walking away. But the public would not accept that ending. The newspapers would not let the story die. And Charles's own family demanded justice, or at least answers. In our next episode, we enter the second inquest, the longest in British legal history. For 23 days, the secrets of the Priory will be exposed to the world. Florence Bravo will finally testify, and her account of the marriage will shock Victorian society. Dr. Gawley will be called to explain his relationship with a woman half his age. And Jane Cox will face questions designed to crack her story wide open. The Balham mystery is about to become a national obsession. Until next time, good night, friend.